Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with John Couch. John engineering and producing the program on this midweek edition. It's Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. We continue to practice our safe distancing while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Of course, we piggyback then with kvoi.com to give you the live stream. We do have all of our podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. If you would like to join in the conversation, the live line number is 790-2040, 790-2040. Let's begin now with Will Hummel, the executive director for the Arizona Public Health Association. His 30 years in public health included more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency's director from 2009 to 2015. Most recently, he served as a health policy director at the University of Arizona, where he is also an adjunct professor. Will Hummel joining us now on the live line from Phoenix. Will, how are you?
Good afternoon. Thanks.
Well, it's been about a month since we had you on the program. The latest numbers in from the Arizona Department of Health, nearly 14,900 confirmed cases, just three short of that figure, 747 known deaths as of Wednesday, and that 43 new deaths, Will Hummel, were reported from Tuesday, the single highest number reported in a single day. Are you concerned?
Well, of course, I'll be concerned until there's a vaccine, because, you know, this is a terrible epidemic, and it's having all kinds of bad outcomes, not just deaths like what you just described, and but, you know, people that have lost their jobs. There's a lot of sacrifice going on. So, yeah, I'll be concerned until there's a vaccine in 7 million Arizonans.
Now, the deaths that have been spiking, and they have been spiking, Will, over the last several weeks, it doesn't necessarily mean all of that happened 24 hours ago. I know there's been a lag, sometimes going back even to early April. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, so you got to remember, when you look at the death statistic, that those folks probably got sick at least 2 weeks ago, maybe even 3 weeks ago, because one of the things we know about this illness is that you know, people have some initial symptoms and then they get worse very quickly. And then, you know, they go to ICUs if it's really bad symptoms, and sometimes they need a ventilator, and those ventilators can save, you know, some of those patients, but some later die. And that whole process can take, you know, a couple to 3 weeks, and then there's a death certificate lag. So, I tend to look at new hospitalizations as the best indicator of where we are in terms of the pathway of this epidemic, you know, over the course of this spring and early summer. Deaths are, of course, a tragic endpoint, but it doesn't tell you as much as new hospitalizations tells you about where we are and what the trend is.
What are you seeing then from those statistics? Share with our listeners what you're seeing when it comes to that hospitalization. What is that showing you?
Yeah, so what we see over the last 3 weeks is a continuous slow, not a big precipitous decline, but a continuous slow decline in the number of new hospitalizations. Those would be new admissions from COVID-19. But remember, you know, we only lifted the stay-at-home order about a week ago, and the incubation period for this virus is about a week. So I expect to see an increase in new hospitalizations in the coming weeks, because there's certainly going to be an increase in transmission of this virus after the stay-at-home order. We hope that it's a modest increase, or I hope there's no increase at all. I expect there to be one. I just hope it's modest. And that would be, if it is modest, it would reflect the fact that most Arizonans, while they know that the stay-at-home order has been lifted for now, that they're still being as safe as they can be, minimizing outdoor exposure, going out in small groups, keeping their distancing, wearing their masks, continuing to wash their hands, and so forth.
Well, a lot of people, it's a big controversy, Will Hummel, about the masks. It's almost become a political statement. There are those that say, I don't need a mask, and then there are the folks that say it does some good. There's all sorts of information out there about, does it do good? What can you tell us about this whole controversy over should you or should you not wear a mask in public?
Okay, so first thing to remember is that when you wear a mask, you're wearing the mask to protect others, not to protect yourself. And so I think that's an important thing to remember. There is some evidence that the mask, a cloth mask even, is effective because this is a droplet disease, which means small droplets. And you'd be surprised. Here we are talking on this show. I know there's droplets coming out of my mouth right now that I don't know about, and it happens.
Yeah.
And so a cloth mask can slow that spread. The reason it's important is because there's so much asymptomatic spread of this illness. And so you can't use the I feel fine attitude to drive your decision to wear a mask, because you might feel fine and you might be infected with the virus and spreading it to somebody who's going to have a bad outcome. And so the way I look at it, here's what I use. I use a bandana, just so you know what I use, because I tie it around my neck and it's there all day. And when I go in and out, I don't have to look for my mask. So there's different ways you can do this. It's a minor inconvenience, but it's something that I think is following the golden rule. Do as to others as you would have them do to you. If we all protect each other by wearing our mask, which is not a big deal, then we're all going to be better off. But going back to what you said at the beginning, I think for some reason, and I don't exactly know why, it has become, I think, something of a political statement, I think, is what you mentioned. And I think it's just a sad commentary because I've been lots of places, and I'm wearing my bandana, and I'm in the minority most of the time. Most of the places that I've been, stores and so forth, there's not wearing any masks. I probably answered more questions than you wanted to on the mask thing, but in summary, there is evidence that they're effective. There is a lot of asymptomatic spread with this disease, which is why it's important to wear your mask even if you don't have any kind of symptoms. And it's part of the golden rule. So if you believe in the golden rule, you should be wearing the mask. If you don't, then don't.
And I have a question, Will, for you about the mask. If I wear a mask, and I do, certainly when I go to Safeway or any of the grocery stores, and when I go into a retailer, I do wear a mask, and I do that out of respect for others. But I'm just wondering, am I getting any protection myself by wearing the mask, and then I interface with someone who is not wearing a mask? Could you give me a little bit of enlightenment on that?
So the evidence that I've seen suggests that, like I mentioned, the reason for the mask is you're helping to protect other people more than you are yourself. You may get some protection. The data is a little less clear on whether it protects you yourself, but in a way there is, because there's a side effect, which is when you're wearing the mask to protect yourself, it discourages you to put your fingers in your mouth and touch your face because you got a mask on. And so that's a side benefit of wearing a mask that you might not think about. But going back to the original thing, it's really a courtesy thing that is, as I mentioned, a simple courtesy to help slow the spread to others more than it is to protect yourself.
I sent you that a copy of this story that's getting a lot of publicity today. It's a Vanity Fair magazine story. It's and I know you haven't had a chance to kind of vet the study, but it says if 80% of Americans wore masks, COVID-19 infections would plummet worldwide. Your thoughts?
Well, I did go to the article, but I read the Vanity Fair article that you sent me, but I wasn't able to find
the study with which the Vanity Fair article is referring to. But to me, I'm just going to tell you, it didn't look to me like it's an actual study. It looks to me like it's an academic model, which is, I'm just telling you, when I made public policy when I was at the health department, I liked peer-reviewed journal articles that were vetted and reviewed, and the statistics were evaluated, and you know, others more talented than me were taking a look and validating. It didn't look to me like that's what this study is, and I just am careful about drawing conclusions about things, even when I agree with something. Like, for example, I think it's a good idea that people should wear masks. That doesn't mean that I agree that you should reinforce studies that haven't been vetted in order to support your position. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
It's important to stay with the evidence when you make recommendations, especially when you're in a policymaking role like I used to be. What you sent me didn't look like strong evidence, although I support the objective, which is to get more people to wear masks. But it's kind of an unclear message, but I'm a data-driven guy. And so anyway, I was a little skeptical, but I will withhold judgment until I see the actual model.
All right, Will Hummel, stick around. We've got a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about modelers. I want to talk about Neil Ferguson from the Imperial College. I want to talk about what the latest models are showing for a peak in Arizona. Modeling will be our next topic, Will. But first, I want to talk to our Buckmaster Show listeners about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are open right now for lunch. And under the new loosening of restrictions, you can walk into the bakery. You can order your bakery goods. You can sit down and dine in the bakery. They have plenty of distancing and they're adhering to all of the latest requirements there. Or you can go outside. They've got plenty of tables on the patio right now. It is a beautiful day here in southern Arizona. Temperatures lower 80s to mid 80s as we push into late May. How unusual. What a perfect time to dine outside at Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More information on their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Also a link to all of our great partners at buckmastershow.com. Lots more to discuss with Will Hummel, former state Arizona health director, as we continue in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. So much to talk about in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on this midweek edition of Buckmaster. Will Hummel is with us. Will's been with us through this this whole crisis. We've had hoped to get him on pretty much every month as things go along here. He is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He is the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. All right, Will, I want to talk about modelers. What are the latest models showing for when Arizona is going to peak?
Yeah, so the answer to that question lies in how people behave. So what the modeling team, which is about 20 researchers, some from U of A, down there in Tucson, and some up at ASU in the Biodesign Institute, are really developing the latest and greatest models using Arizona-specific data. And what they do is they take where we are today and look at the data and put it into a best-fit algorithm for where we are. And then what they do is they have various projections and say, now, we've now lifted the stay-at-home order. If that increases transmission of the virus by 10%, and this is what we can expect to see with the epidemic over the next 2 months. If it increases transmission of the virus 30%, for example, then this is what we'll see. And so if you go to the ASU Biodesign website, you can look at that model, and it's an academic model, just so you know. So it's about 26 pages and pretty dense. But it's. I think if you spend enough time on it, any layman could understand the results. But essentially, it's a decision-making tool to help policymakers, for example, the governor, the health director, et cetera, to, as real-time data comes in, look at that graph and make a decision about where it looks like the transmission is going, and it allows them to then forecast 2 to 3 weeks ahead so that if it turns out to be, for example, that lifting the stay-at-home order is going to increase transmission of the virus 30%, then it shows you that we have a big spike. If that actually happens, then we're going to have a big spike in hospitalizations in July. We hope that doesn't happen, that people behave responsibly, and that transmission of the virus only increases, say, 10%. And if that happens, then you see, while the virus still is in Arizona and it's not going to be gone, like we talked about, until there's a vaccine, we don't see a big spike in hospitalizations. And so, so that's the value of these models. It helps policymakers look 2 to 3 weeks ahead using current data and helps them to, if they need to do another stay-at-home order. If, let's say, it turns out that it looks like it's 30% increase in transmission, it might be that the governor then decides to use the model and say, hey, do another couple-week lockdown in order to tamp this down so that we can save some lives and keep our hospital capacity.
Now to the most famous modeler in the world. His name is Neil Ferguson of the Imperial College in London. His information, his model in March basically shut down planet Earth. And today, the Telegraph newspaper in London reports that the model could be, was this a devastating mistake? And there are some people who think it was. Your thoughts?
So I'll just be honest with you, Bill, and I said this in the email. When I read that at the very beginning, at least 2 months ago when the Imperial College model came out, to me, I just saying, it looked to me like an advocacy piece more than research. That was my first impression. And I got that impression by the way the researcher was talking, the people from Imperial College, the kind of language that they were using, the level of certainty that they implied as they discussed their results made me believe that it was really an advocacy piece more than it was science. So that was my first impression, and it appears as though there's some growing critical mass to, well, there is. There has been growing critical mass in that direction for some time now. But let's take a step back, which goes to part of the question, which how much damage was done by that report? And I don't think we know the answer to that question yet, because if you have to look at the politics in the UK at the time, and at the time, you know, Johnson's government, you know, the majority party there in the UK was extremely skeptical about whether COVID-19 was serious or not. And there was real reluctance to really basically do anything. If you remember, you know, Spain was and even northern Italy were going gangbusters, and the UK was lackadaisical at the point. So I think the Imperial College model captured enough attention in the leadership party there in the UK that, you know, put together the motivation to do essentially whatever the U.S. I don't know what they called it there, but essentially their stay-at-home order, which was a good policy decision. The damage that was done is that the credibility of the science and to the value of modeling was done. And as I mentioned, modeling isn't there to say, predict and say this is exactly what's going to happen. It's a valuable tool to help decision makers evaluate different options and look forward, say 3 weeks, and make decisions today to impact so that they don't end up with really bad outcomes that the model would have forecasted using current data. So it's a complicated answer. I think it did damage to science. Whether it did damage overall is, I think, an outstanding question.
It is, and I'm glad you clarified that. It's an advisory tool. That's what a model is. Getting back to Ferguson, and I think the knock on him in this Telegraph piece out of London today is, why in the world didn't folks get a second opinion? That it would have seemed prudent, and then maybe blend the two models. But I suppose you were still going to get the advice to pretty much shut things down, right, Will Hummel?
Well, I think in the end, the policy decision would have been the same. But yeah, you ask an interesting question. And I think the answer, I'll speculate for a minute.
Okay.
Number one, when it comes to stuff like this, if you're Johnny on the spot, you're the one who gets the attention.
Yeah.
And so Imperial College is like, oh, there's a pandemic. Let's run a model. And in my view, it was more advocacy than a model, and that we could get famous and people will pay attention to us. And and because you're first, you get all the attention. So I think that was part of it. And I also, I don't know this for a fact, but most of the time when people have that kind of influence, there's also relationships that exist where there could be some members in Parliament, for example, that knew him or worked with him earlier in their career or in some way know him and were giving him some street cred within Parliament. So I don't know that. I'm totally speculating on that part. But the first part, I'm probably not speculating. If you're Johnny on the spot and you're quick, you'll get the attention. And that's not always a good thing.
All right, now I have less than 2 minutes, and this is really an important question about heat here in Arizona. Any indication that heat is slowing down COVID?
So we don't know yet. And that's and by the way, if you look at that model we talked about, the ASU and U of O folks put together, that's one of the great uncertainties in that latest development in their model, which was posted on the website a couple days ago, is they are not modeling a seasonal effect in. If there is a seasonal effect, and there might be, it would really end up slowing the transmission. And so even though the lockdown order, the stay-at-home order is lifted, if the big heat that we have in Arizona has an impact on this virus, and it might, we could end up seeing an actual decrease in the transmission of the virus and a slowing of in the spread of COVID-19. Let's hope that that happens. There's not any clear evidence that that's the case, but there might be. I mean, you know, I know we only have a few seconds left, but you know, one of the things that gives me pause is that in Ecuador, which is right on the equator, there was a city at sea level.
City is Guayaquil, right on the coast. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a really bad, very hot, very humid, very bad outbreak. Mm-hmm. That gives me pause to think that the summer's gonna help us.
All right. Will Hummel, always a pleasure. Thank you, Will. Have a great day.
Take care. Anytime.
Thanks a lot, Will Hummel. Former Arizona State Health Director. He always is a wealth of information. He's a real straight shooter, and I'm glad he's been available for us on the program. Buckmaster, Midway Point, be right back.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 50 years and still growing, celebrating that half century of giving people beautiful things for their garden. And they've got them right now, and a lot of people doing gardening. It's the perfect time of year. Perhaps you're off today. What a gorgeous afternoon this is for this time of year. Be a great time to head over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road, and pick up all of your plants. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and, of course, zocalovillage.com. It's time for our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice interview series. All of these interviews that we're doing on our three news programs, Wake Up Tucson, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, and, of course, my program. All the programs that have to do with candidate interviews are being archived at kvoi.com. Gives you good one-stop shopping to meet our candidates. And today we meet Kim Challender. Kim is the running for Pima County Recorder and is on the live line right now. Kim, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are filling, you hope to fill, the position that has been held for, it seems like, forever. F.A.N. Rodriguez, over 27 years, F.A.N. has been doing a great job as Pima County Recorder. What has your association been, Kim, with the department?
Well, I've been with the department since 2014. I am currently the assistant chief deputy on leave because that's Pima County policy. When you run for office, if you're not an incumbent, you have to take a leave of absence. So, but I've been there. I've learned so much from Ann over the years. I started out as an assistant, more of an HR person, and I've moved up to assistant chief deputy. So what I handle is early voting sites and personnel issues and budgets, that kind of stuff in the office.
And what would your policy be like? What would your administration be like as heading up the department?
Well, like you said, F.A.N. Rodriguez has done an amazing job starting out with absentee. There was no absentee voting when she started, and now we have over, 575,000 voters, and probably going to have close to 400,000 voters voting in the November election. So following in her footsteps and keeping those processes in place. And moving, I do have agendas I'd like to move forward. Like, I am a big all vote by mail person. I would like to see that happen. I would also like to see if we can get some of the registration. Right now, it's the registration. It takes almost a month to before an election. You have to be registered almost a month before the election. And I would like to see that cut down to same-day registrations and automatic registrations. There's a lot of policies that I like to move forward within the office.
Kim, tell me, what percentage of people are voting now on early voting? And it's a small group, I guess, that still vote on election day that go to a polling place. Could you fill us in on that?
Just about 80%. We're almost at 80% vote early. Most of those vote by mail. And that's still a lot of people. And, you know, we're looking at the COVID issues right now going on. And that's still going to equate to almost 50,000 people in November that would be voting, along with about 1,500 poll workers would be voting at the polls, and something I'd like to see changed if possible.
And we have early voting, Kim, beginning in just 6 weeks. It's really coming up fast. So there are going to be a lot of questions about poll workers in July, whether or not folks are going to want to take part in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of groups have been getting out there. And I know that the Pima County Recorder's Office has also put out flyers and media talking about how important it is to register for the permanent early voting list or call the office. You can actually call the Pima County Recorder's Office and they'll send you a ballot in the mail, even if you're not on that permanent early voting list. That number is 520-724-4330, if anyone's interested.
You have been then the assistant chief deputy of the Pima County Recorder's Office since, what, 2014? Is that what you said?
No, I've been the assistant. I've been in the recorder's office since 2014. Okay. I have been the assistant chief deputy for 2 years now.
So you've learned a lot from F.N. Rodriguez.
Oh, goodness. So much. Whether it's legislative issues that we're following and voter suppression issues that and working with the other recorders across the county, or I'm sorry, across the state, the other 14 elected officials. There's so much to this office, not to mention, you know, we always talk about the voting side and the early voting side and the voter registration side, but there's a whole nother side to the recorder's office, and that's recording and preserving documents and land transactions. So you know, people don't realize that you don't get the keys to your home or the check if you're selling a home until we've recorded your document.
Wow. I don't think most people realize that.
No.
What's it?
No, and that's, you know, that's slow and steady. That's a slow and steady process, and but it's still 200,000 documents a year, a million pages of documents a year.
Kim, before we let you go, what's it been like trying to campaign when everybody's been kind of closed in and it's hard to go door to door? How are you kind of positioning yourself for this run?
Well, there's a lot of social media. Postcard mailings, phone calls. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how we're reaching out, right? We are not, we are definitely not going out there and walking and canvassing at all.
All right, Kim, where can people find out more about you?
All right. I have a website that's Kim, the number 4 recorder. So kim4recorder.com.
And Kim Challender, that's the correct pronunciation, correct?
Correct. It is.
And you are a Democrat, and you are being in a primary. So you've got a very important role here, and you're hoping to move on to the general election.
Absolutely. That's my goal.
All right, Kim, thank you very much for the time.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill.
Kim Challender is with us and has been with us talking about her candidacy for Pima County Recorder for the last couple of years. She has been Assistant Chief Deputy of the Pima County Recorder's Office and, of course, F.N. Rodriguez, nearly 3 decades as Pima County Recorder, is stepping aside and retiring. F.N. Has been an institution in this community for so long. Very good person. All right, that's going to wrap up this portion of the Buckmaster Show. By the way, all of our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice interview series, all those interviews are archived at KVOI.com. Coming up next, our aviation contributor, Jeff Lattice, captain at JetBlue, as airline bookings starting to tick up a little bit. We'll talk to Jeff right after this.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. When you're ready to travel, and who isn't these days? A lot of people have had cabin fever. Some people have not interacted with another human being now for, they've been in their home for 2.5 months. And some say they won't go out until there's a vaccine, but others are out and about and trying to be cautious. But people are restless. If you're thinking about a trip to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, my friends over there are waiting with open arms to welcome you after your three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find a list of great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities. Some of my listeners have been sending me photos. They've been out and about. They were visiting the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Not another soul around. Certainly, now you can go 6 feet, you could go 600 feet, or you could go even further than that. There's not going to be anybody around. SouthwestNewMexico.org. Well, as travelers are slowly beginning to return to the skies, there is a glimmer of hope. Demand is starting to pick up. Southwest, United, Delta, Alaska, JetBlue, all reporting an uptick now in travel. Let's bring in the Buckmaster Show contributor on aviation, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice. Jeff, a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Jeff flies the Airbus A320 and the A321. He has nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free flight experience. He has not been flying as much as he would like lately. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I haven't been flying that much recently.
How many trips did you have in April?
One.
One trip. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and that was only one flight, too. So I've only flown two times since the end of March.
Wow.
That I've actually operated the airplane. So it's definitely impacted the cruise. We're not complaining a whole lot, though. I mean, a lot of us would like to get back to work, obviously. But because of the legislation that was passed and the Paycheck Protection Program that the airlines got, all airline employees are pretty much covered until the end of September. So as far as income for us is concerned, we're doing okay.
Well, Jeff, when you do return to the skies, I think you're going to start to see a difference. We're hearing that the loads, which were, I mean, what, you were flying maybe six or seven people on a flight, and they're now saying by June, July, certainly, load factors pushing nearly 40 to 50%. So things are starting to improve. At least that's what we're hearing.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure, because when they give us those kinds of numbers,
right,
is that based on keeping airplanes parked and what they are just currently flying right now? It's definitely not going to be the same numbers in comparison to a year ago. So I think that if they're showing 40 to 50% capacity, that's based on the numbers of flights they have scheduled. And that's still only maybe 20% of where it was a year ago. So it's still not like it's going to be like it was. It's going to take, and I heard reports, up to 3 years
right
before the airline industry is back to where it was, let's say, a year ago.
And to get people back on the planes, the airlines are all trying to go with this keeping the middle seat empty. Your airline announced today, JetBlue, is going to make that a The policy is now official. Alaska, Delta, Southwest had all been doing the social distancing where possible. Now JetBlue, when you make a reservation through at least July the 6th, JetBlue will be restricting the sale of a significant number of seats that will guarantee customers will not be flying next to next to a stranger. So that might help.
Yeah, and that's part of another reason why the capacity is down, because are they counting those seats?
Probably not.
As part of the capacity?
Probably not.
You know?
No.
So, you know, there's a lot of statistics here that I'm not even certain of. But I will say, because my last flight I did was actually a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And to get to L.A. From Tucson, there's only one flight a day right now in the morning.
Wow.
It's I think SkyWest is who does it for Delta. So
yeah,
it's a Delta flight. And I almost didn't get on because of the reduced seating.
Right.
If you go and you take a look, if you go to the apps or whatever and you look at the seat maps, they look wide open. In reality, because Delta's probably even more restrictive than JetBlue is, they do it based on percentage, not by an empty seat. My opinion is, for certain routes, they need to start adding flights.
Right.
They need to start bringing flights back, and I think that Delta's already said that they're getting ready to increase their capacity.
Yeah, Jeff, they announced that yesterday. I looked at those flights.
Yeah.
They're opening up the Caribbean again. They've moved all the JFK flights, with the exception of, I think, two a week. Everything's now going to be out of their hub in Atlanta. But they are opening, they are pretty much opening in June, the schedule into the Caribbean. So things are opening up internationally.
Yeah, the Caribbean's been pretty restrictive.
Right.
That's the individual governments of those island nations have been very restrictive on American or U.S. flights going in there. You got to remember, a lot of their customer base, the tourist base, is East Coast more than West Coast, and the East Coast has been affected a lot more severely with COVID than the rest of the country. So it really did, they were like, we don't want any sick people coming down here. So that kind of restricted the Caribbean a lot more, just based on kind of the demographics of it all.
What about what about masks? Everybody is required now to wear a mask?
just about all airlines are requiring this now, where you won't even be allowed to board the aircraft unless you have a mask. Now, most of the airlines offer those masks. Mm-hmm. And for the cabin, you have to wear it all the time. And there's, you know, no exceptions.
Have you?
So all the way through deplaning, you have to wear the mask.
Have you noticed it's easier to push back? You're not worrying so much about a lot of air traffic. Our schedule's getting off pretty early.
Yeah and no. Because our loads, and this is just a JetBlue specific thing that I've run into, it's the way that we do our weight and balance. Because the loads are so light, it's more difficult to balance the airplane.
Really?
So you actually have to sit down and, you know, and we have specialists that actually do this, and they have to figure that out because it's easy to become more out of it. I guess the way airlines design airplanes is based on a certain percentage, like 80% or something.
Right.
And because the loads are so much drastically lower than that, it takes longer to actually figure out, okay, how many bags do we need to put in the forward part of the airplane versus the back, considering where the people are sitting. So I've run into this problem in my last two flights, which, you know, the only two flights I've done in a while, and both times I've run into this problem where we had a weight and balance.
That harkens back to kind of when I was flying some of the real small planes. Puddle jumpers kind of moved people around. Balancing the load. Who would ever imagine you'd be doing that in one of your Airbuses, trying to keep people?
Yeah, you know, and it's just one of those things. You go, I guess, you know. It takes a while longer with less people to figure out what the balance is going to be. And it's easy to fix. I don't want to, you know, put anybody at concern. All you have to do is either move the bags or move people around, and there's plenty of room to do that. But it still takes a little bit of time. But when things are going good, we're pushing back sometimes 20, 25 minutes early.
Wow.
And the policy basically is if everybody's checked in and nobody's, you know, late to the gate, you can go. And you know, when you only have 20 people on the plane, it's pretty easy to get them on.
Jeff, I'm running out of time real quickly, but there's been a lot of talk about the air quality on planes. The air quality on airplanes, aircraft, is pretty darn good, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I thought about it, and I'll try to be quick.
Yeah, I've got 1 minute, Jeff.
Okay. The air is replaced in most airplanes in less than about 3 minutes, maybe only 2 minutes. So it's a fresh air that often coming in from the outside. Also, the recycled air goes through filters, and those filters, at least in Airbuses, are down to 1 micron, and that's enough to filter out any virus.
Wow.
So actually the air coming out of the vents is exceptionally clean. Even if everybody had COVID, the air is still coming out very, very clean. Oh. So it's the air quality is not bad. Now, if you're sitting next to somebody that close, obviously, you know, you can still get contaminated.
Sure.
But the air quality on airplanes is usually pretty good when it comes to bacteria and viruses.
All right, Jeff.
So there could be some other issues, too, but we can talk about that later.
We will. Jeff Lattice, thank you very much. Safe flying when you get back up in the air quickly, I hope, with JetBlue. Thanks, Jeff.
You bet. Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right, that's going to do it for Buckmaster. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of my friend, engineer-producer John Couch. Another show, another hour loaded with good local content for you. Dave Ramsey's program on money is next. Have a great afternoon.